Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. This is a health show. We've been covering the science and research of health effects of wireless technologies for the last 11 years. We're concerned. Now we're looking at an aggressive expansion of wireless broadband across the country. We want people to have internet access, but there are questions about how it's delivered. Now, it might surprise you to discover that wireless broadband is actually an inferior technology. That health concerns aside, it's not secure, it's slow, and it's not free. In fact, there are safer, faster technologies that don't necessitate installing towers and antennas near homes and schools, lowering property values, endangering the environment, and increasing lawsuits. We're joined today by two activists to discuss both alternatives to wireless broadband and how other parts of the country and the world are resisting the proliferation of wireless technologies that are making the telecoms very rich and children very ill. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. The current issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association is devoted to health promotion and disease prevention in children. Even the usual fare about vaccinations was of interest. Nicaraguan children vaccinated against rotavirus suffered less from diarrhea. The outcome was of less interest than the fact that the effectiveness of the vaccinations for Nicaraguan children was half that for U.S. children. What could account for the difference? Neither the authors nor the journal's editors discuss possible answers. The diamond among these articles does suggest an answer. In Neuroscience, Molecular Biology, and the Childhood Roots of Health Disparities, researchers review the substantial literature on how adversities and trauma in childhood affect a person's risk of illness as an adult. The research points to two basic mechanisms for increased risk. One has to do with accumulated damage over time, and the other has to do with biological effects embedded during specific developmental stages. Accumulated damage occurs through the chronic stress brought on by exposures that can start in the womb. For example, African Americans live 4 to 6 fewer years than whites, even after taking into account things like income and access to medical care. On the other hand, exposures during certain developmental periods can affect a child's biology in a way that is maladapted to subsequent stages of development, maturity, and aging. For example, adults who experience maltreatment as very young children are more likely to suffer from inflammatory diseases regardless of their exposures to stressors later in life because their immune systems were permanently set on alert. The recommendations that come out of the research review is that greater policy attention needs to be placed on enhancing programs that support children's health and welfare as a means of preventing adult as well as childhood illness. In essence, the authors call for government action to compensate for the consequences of inequity and adversity in the cruelties they incite. An obvious implication is that eliminating inequity and adversity in the first place would make a worthy focus of health policy, but that would be contrary to our cultural myth that anyone can become a millionaire, a myth that requires a social system built on inequity and adversity. But I digress. What's significant for me about the review is that a major medical journal has published an article about promoting health and preventing disease from a perspective that has nothing to do with doctors, medical practices, or medicine in any way. It's about making sure children are safe and cared for in a stable environment. However, another article, while promoting the same perspective, brings the medical model back into the picture. Its title gives it away. Creating a Healthier Future Through Early Interventions for Children. Interventions by whom? Why, medical professionals, of course. They'll be educating other medical professionals as well as parents and community organizations on how to make children safe and cared for in a stable environment using evidence-based science. What's evidence-based science? Why, that's knowledge that's been ground out of the health industrial complex because that's where the evidence is sanctioned. Where are the parents and communities and their evidence and knowledge? They are intervenees, the people who are on the business end of an intervention. Again, a single-payer system is the most humane as well as the most economically and socially rational solution for delivering medical care. The forces of commerce continue to thwart it. And lost in the fight over single-payer and all the second-best solutions is the fact that, for the most part, health doesn't have anything to do with medicine. While universal medical care is worth fighting for, the real fight is for a stable environment in which children, and adults too, are safe and cared for. That doesn't happen in the doctor's office. It happens in schools, stores, streets, factories, and homes. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me and is primary author of our upcoming book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Now to our two guests and our show, which is Alternatives to Wireless Broadband. Doug Loringer, who's been on the show before, is a community organizer, activist, and documentary filmmaker in San Francisco. In 2000, he co-founded SNAFU, S-N-A-F-U, the San Francisco Neighborhood Antenna Free Union, and this year he worked with activists around the country to form the nationwide organization CLOUT, C-L-O-U-T, the Coalition for Local Oversight of Utility Technologies. He is the producer and director of the film Bad Reception, The Wireless Revolution in San Francisco. We're also joined by Hollywood writer and producer Sally Hampton. She's known best for her tireless work for animal protection, the environment, the American Indian community, and universal health care. Known as an outspoken defender of rights for television's creative community, she has written and edited numerous articles for the Caucus Journal and is on the forefront on major media issues, leading the caucus to take a stand on net neutrality and drafting their official letter to the FCC on the issue. She testified before the FCC on the effects of media concentration on creative artists and was instrumental in getting the National League of Women Voters to adopt net neutrality as an issue for emphasis at their national convention. Once a wireless gadget junkie, Sally, that's her words, Sally was unfamiliar with the EMF issue until T-Mobile attempted to place a cell facility in her neighborhood. After careful research, she decided to remove Wi-Fi in her home and now rarely uses a cell phone. She also organized her community to defeat T-Mobile's installation, although T-Mobile has appealed and she will go before the LA Board of Supervisors one more time. Her activism has led her to reach out to other communities, and Sally is one of the founding members of the new Southern California Coalition, REACT, Residents Engaged Against Cell Towers. So I want to welcome both of you. Doug, welcome to you.
Nice to be here.
And Sally, welcome
Thanks.
To you.
Yes, thank you very much.
You know, I want to start with you, Sally, and it occurs to me because of the end of your bio, it mentions that you're going to be, that you went before the LA supervisors again, and we've just had some very important breaking news about the LA supervisors. Do you want to explain that before we get into wireless broadband?
Well, sure. And as a result of the increasing opposition to, you know, cell installations, largely by T-Mobile, but, you know, entering into the residential areas and near schools, it's created a big backlash, and because of that, I've been able to organize and encourage a lot of communities to speak out, and we've lobbied the supervisors, and after careful consideration of the information that they've received from citizens, they started to listen, and they drafted a motion condemning the federal law, Section 704 of the Telecommunication Act of 1996, that prohibits the local governments from considering the health and safety effects of the installations when they approve the permits. You know, when these battles take place, they're usually because they have these permits or these installations going next to a home or a school, and yet the local governments have had their hands tied, so they can't consider the health effects, and citizens have not been able to speak out about it at hearings for fear that the telecom companies will use it as a reason to then sue the local jurisdiction if they deny the permit. So it's created a lot of problems, but finally we're seeing a shift, and these local officials are listening and taking action, and this was a very big step because Los Angeles County represents nearly 10 million people. It's the second largest in the country.
This is an extremely important event, having this happen, having the supervisors put out this resolution. Doug, do you want to comment on this before we go on? I mean, I was stunned when I read the resolution.
Yeah, well, basically, the resolution passed by the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors on June 2nd, which was just last week, basically does three things. The first is what Sally just mentioned. It calls for a repeal of the Telecommunication Act of 1996, health preemption. That's the federal law that's been hanging over our heads since that act was passed, you know, almost 15 years ago. On the state level, it seeks to change the current California Public Utilities Code regulations governing wireless facilities in public rights of way, and that's usually on lighter utility poles, because local governments have even less authority in California and other states to regulate antennas on rights of way. So they're seeking to strengthen that ability of local governments to regulate those. And finally, it calls for the FCC to revise its exposure guidelines, which currently are designed to protect people from thermal effects, you know, from microwave ovens and that type of thing, and to bring them in line with the most protective standards that other countries have adopted around the world. So those are the three things that the resolution's called for, and so that's, you know, a very big step forward that, you know, a major local government is going on the record and actually urging, seeking legislation at the congressional level and also at the state level to overturn these laws.
Now, we should say also, to give Sally due, this is very much because of Sally's extraordinary efforts and effectiveness. So congratulations. This was a big thing. Congratulations to you.
Well, thank you, but I also have to give Doug
his due.
His due, because if it wasn't for Doug, who was one of the first people that I contacted about a year and a half ago, or almost 2 years ago now, regarding my own battle, I don't think I would be sitting here today talking to you, and I don't think we would have been able to win our case, and I wouldn't have had the courage to do what I did.
Doug is very often in the background talking to people in municipalities like we did in our own here when we had to face a tower installation. So, yes, Doug is our go-to guy. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to say the thing that I hear the most often, which drives me around the bend. But nevertheless, this is what people say when they're faced with this issue. They say, oh, come on, it's the 21st century. What is the matter with you? Get with the program. But this wireless broadband that's being pushed, possibly an Obama stimulus bill, there are alternatives that are better. I spoke to you guys, and then later I spoke to an IT specialist. What he said is, oh my goodness, the backbone of the internet is fiber optics. Mm-hmm. It's fiber optics. There's a reason why overseas calls are all over fiber optic cable. Sheer capacity compared to bandwidth, there's only so much range in wireless to carry data. It's a very limited capacity. It's like 45 megs throughput compared to more than 10 gigabytes with fiber optic. He said if cable TV video on demand was fiber optic, high definition would be on all channels. He said standard cable will never be able to do it. Only fiber optic to the curb is the answer for everybody being connected to the internet. But I would like to hear you, both of you, Sally, to start. Tell us about why we're getting the short end of the stick by business and property owners and property values and the environment are all being short shrift with this ridiculous technology that's being pushed down our throat with no alternatives.
Well, I think that what we have now is we're not treating the infrastructure the way we should, which should be a very important public infrastructure like a road, and because of that we have a model now that's promoted what I say is dumb growth based on dumb competition, because the competition has not, you know, driven prices down or done any of the things that they claimed it would do. And in addition to that, what a lot of people are unaware of is that the industry, the telecom industry, received over $200 billion in rate hikes and tax cuts to deliver fiber optic system infrastructure, but they did not do so. They pocketed the money, and it's been large, it's not been reported. I happened to find out about this when I saw Bill Moyers interviewing a man who founded an organization called teletruth.org. You can go to it, Teletruth, and download the report. It's over 400 pages outlining the whole history and how this happened, and it really is, as he calls it, a scandal.
So it's T-E-L-E-T-R-U-T-H?
Right, Teletruth, T-E-L-E-T-R-U-T-H.org.
.org, and I would imagine that if people go to Bill Moyers' website online that you may be able to find the original interview as well.
Well, the interview, he was part of another interview on net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not find it that way, but if they go to Teletruth.org, there's a link.
Oh, they have it.
There's a link to the Bill Moyers interview from that site, and where he was part of it, because they were discussing the fact that a town in Louisiana had fought the telecom industry to install their own publicly owned fiber optic system, and it was a big success when they finally won, and that was a part of that. So that's why I've always thought to myself, as we fight the wireless industry, that a lot of this wouldn't happen if we had, you know, different ways of doing things here in this country, which, you know, I agree with the person who was also speaking about single payer. It's health care. It's very similar, too.
And that's Jeff Fawcett, PhD. It's the co-producer, yeah.
Correct, yeah.
So why is it, why is fiber? I mean, I gave that quote from my IT guy, but in your own words, why are we being short-shrifted? What are the advantages to fiber optics? It sounds expensive to dig up the streets.
Well, I would say that it's a long-term investment. It might be cheaper for the wireless industry up front, and it's faster for them to install the wireless, but that's disposable infrastructure. That's not green technology either.
Why isn't it green?
Well, when you think of the devices, I mean, the wireless devices that they're constantly selling to people that you throw away.
Well, there's something else.
And
the towers themselves.
And the towers themselves, exactly. And the fact that there's the health risks that are associated with it. There's nothing like that with fiber.
There's something else about towers that most people don't realize. First of all, when we were faced with a tower going in, contractor who was contracting with a company he works for to get a contract with our municipality on behalf of Verizon, what he told us is it costs Verizon, even with a good site with a cement pad and a road to it and electricity to the site, if they have all of that, he said it costs them $500,000 to put up the tower. And the tower has a backup energy system in case of a blackout, which has backup batteries which contain sulfuric acid. If there were a fire on the site, if anything happened, there would be hazardous materials to take care of the generator, and the site itself would have a meltdown. In addition, the Audubon Society and many other people have been reporting on the number of songbirds that are being killed because their innate electromagnetic sensory, you know, things from the earth to figure out how to migrate are being interfered with. They tend to become caught flying around the tower, and some of them fly down to the ground to their death. So it's killing a lot of animals. We don't know about bees. There are many people who believe so, and there are scientists looking at this. So there's also evidence of trees dying, and so it's one of those things where we have enough scientific knowledge about the effects it's having on animal models and humans now, real honest-to-God science. If people doubt it, they can go to Paraphysiology Journal, which devoted its last journal completely to the issue, along with with an article by the writers of the Bioinitiative. But the health effects are no longer in dispute. But that is even aside from the toxic quality of the installation itself.
Correct. That's a very good point. And I think Doug has information, too, about the fiber benefits. He knows more than I do.
Yeah. Well, let's hear from Doug.
Well, I think you mentioned at the beginning, I mean, the compared to right now, the state-of-the-art fiber optic is 10 gigabytes per second. And compare that to the fastest wirelesses, which is out there, which would be in the low hundreds of megabytes. So, you know, that exists, that possibility exists, but it's not being offered to you or to most consumers around the country. And very few of the wireless providers can deliver those the top speeds that I just mentioned to you. In part, that's because these wireless in some ways is a misnomer, because that cell tower, that wireless router, eventually gets hooked into the wired telephone network. And right now you've got a hodgepodge of distribution structures all around the country that these cell towers and Wi-Fi routers and everything else plug into. So it's a big mishmash. It's kind of an anarchic situation out there.
So what you're saying is it wouldn't even be possible to do wireless without some kind of cable.
No, I mean the two go together. I mean, so it's you know, people who think that the what they're watching on their iPhones magically appears completely free of wires don't understand how the telephone network works. So you really can't talk about wireless without wired. Now, from the other point of view, for those people out there who, you know, have fallen in love with their BlackBerries and all these other devices. Promoting and building out a, you know, a long-term fiber optic network in this country, what's called fiber to the curb or fiber to the premises, where these high bandwidth fiber cables come directly to your apartment building, or for example, in the city of Amsterdam, they're underway right now to not only hook up every building in the city of Amsterdam with a fiber optic cable, but to hook up each individual apartment in Amsterdam. I mean, that's what's being done around the world. And meanwhile, here we've got all these cell phone companies fighting against each other to slap up as many antennas as they can to provide you some relatively not so hot service that will be, you know, obsolete in a year or two because of the security problems, the encryption problems, a whole host of reasons. And your last year's phone goes into the landfill. So basically, I think the argument, one of the big arguments in favor of, and especially in the context of this broad, of Obama's stimulus package, where there's going to be billions of dollars literally spent on broadband around the country, and will this be wireless broadband or will it be wired broadband, fiber optic? Well, it's probably going to be both, but the way the major players are lining up at the trough right now, it's probably going to lean towards wireless unless we put pressure on this. So if the country put its focus on a long-term, durable fiber infrastructure, fiber to the premises, fiber into rural areas, fiber into schools and so forth, that would have, I think, the effect of toning down this anarchic wireless world we're in. Let us put a more rational approach to the deployment of wireless, including wired infrastructure, and that would include a more rational approach to where antennas need to be placed. Now, just stepping back, one of the big events that happened recently was actually outside the U.S. In the European Parliament a couple of months ago on April 2nd, passed a resolution overwhelmingly. I think it was 559 votes to 22 votes. In a resolution dealing with health concerns associated with electromagnetic fields. And one of the, you know, it's a long resolution, but one of the provisions in this, or a couple of them, one of them is that antennas should be shared among different wireless carriers. And that, if that policy was implemented in this country, where that would immediately cut down on the number of cell sites that are out there and the exposures people are who live near these are subjected to. They also, in the European Parliament, voted to keep schools, to keep antennas away from certain locations like schools, retirement homes, and healthcare institutions. Now, meanwhile, back in the United States, because of this Federal Telecom Act, it's illegal to keep an antenna, a cell site antenna, away from a school for precautionary health reasons. You can't do it for those reasons. So basically, I think, you know, stepping back for a second, looking at the big picture, seeing what's happening with the stimulus package that's coming down the pike, we'd all be better off, including those people who do regularly use wireless devices of one kind or another, to be asking for a fiber optic infrastructure in this country so that everyone's service is improved. And for those of us concerned about the environmental health effects of the wireless devices and antennas and so forth, it would give us at least a foothold to start to deal with that and make that a more rational plan process. And that would include, as the L.A. County Board of Supervisors asked for, letting local governments use health and environmental concerns when deciding where and where not to place antennas, and also getting the FCC to bring their exposure standards up to date and make them much, much more protective. So we're doing this in a way that looks to the future and looks to the potential problems that are going to come down the road, not only technological problems and providing people, you know, super fast television or whatever they're going to want in the future, but looking towards protecting our health and the environment.
You're listening to an interview. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett. That was Doug Loringer, clout.org, clout.org.
It's actually cloutnow.org.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because clout was over.
Go, it was gone. clout.now.org.
That's correct.
And Sally Hampton of React, and I don't recall your website. It will be on our website, but yours again?
We're part of Clout, actually.
Oh, okay. So you can just go to cloutnow.org and keep up with this stuff. A few moments before we go to break, you know, the big argument here is always going to come down to nanner things like, well, again, you know, digging up the streets is expensive, but as I pointed out, putting in a cell tower, and they're putting them everywhere, and they're paying. Now, it's nice for municipalities. They think, oh my goodness, we're getting some money from this. So it's a kind of gold rush, especially in a recession, to have a tower go up and they pay rent. The installation cost is enormous. The telecoms are extremely wealthy. They're not being held to any standards at all, but they are, as Doug pointed out, in Europe. Now, here what we found when we fought a cell tower and got Verizon to go away because we were so fierce is that we discovered that we're getting really good serviceable cell phone service from a tower that is 4.5 miles from us. And I realize some of this has to do with site to site and all kinds of other things. All of that goes away with fiber optic. And indeed, it is possible to go into rural areas with fiber optic. So long term, I think that the costs are going to be lower for fiber optic because I think we're going to begin seeing some suits. And the suits will be against municipalities who agreed to erect these things.
Also, I would like to say that once they install fiber, they don't have to go back and do any upgrades. With wireless infrastructure, they're constantly having to upgrade and change and go back. Or, you know, as Doug said, it becomes obsolete very, very quickly. With fiber, my understanding is that it's nearly, the capacity is nearly limitless. So that once it's in, and it will be, you know, years and years, decades before I could imagine they would have to do anything. Am I correct, Doug?
Well, that may be a little optimistic, but I think the basic point is correct in that once you lay the fiber optic cables themselves, you know, current state-of-the-art fiber optic, it's relatively easier to switch out the equipment that actually transmits through them, whereas it's pretty much a one-time thing laying the cables, and there they are for however long, you know, they're going to work, which is probably going to be a significant period of time. I think in general what you said is correct.
And indeed, people who have, again, everybody's entitled to their own wishes, but there are people who want to be able to plug in a laptop or use their, as they're sometimes called, crackberries, out in wilderness areas, and they will indeed still be able to do that, right?
I would say with fiber backbone, they would be able to do it even more effectively.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
We're going to take a brief break. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. We're on the phone with Doug Loringer and Sally Hampton. Sally Hampton represents REACT in Southern California. Doug is Northern California, San Francisco-based, but has started a new organization that is national, and it is Clout Now, CLOUTNOW.org. We're going to just take a brief break. We'll be back in about 30 seconds. Stay with us. We'll be back after this. Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett.
Operator, hold for a minute, please.
Hello?
Yes,
can you call 678-9866?
Main area code?
Yes.
Right.
Is that Mickey?
He's going to bump you off yet. He's got a gun, you know. If he didn't get you in Laurel Canyon, he won't get you here.
Hello?
Vicki?
Yeah?
What's happening?
Listen, your father has called me up.
Now, look, just don't panic, but just tell me. Okay.
I think my phone's tapped, too.
Well, don't worry about it. It's quite all right.
All right. Your father called me up this afternoon.
Just a sec.
Hold tight, Daddy, don't you blow your...
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We're doing a show today on alternatives to wireless broadband. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. Again, our guests are Doug Loringer and Sally Hampton. And the website to go to is the new national-wide organization, cloutnow.org, CLOUTNOW.org. So we were talking a lot about wireless, I mean, not wireless broadband, but fiber optic broadband and its benefits, both health and just quality. I mean, it's always appalling how people do sound on their cell phones and how used to people are now at looking at really low quality transmissions, which would not be the case with fiber optic. So we're being handed a substandard, a bad alternative. Yeah, and there is good evidence that we as taxpayers have paid $200 billion to the telecoms and for fiber optics. This is kind of a done deal, and people, again, can go to, Teletruth.
Teletruth.org.
Teletruth.org.
Consumers and taxpayers, because they got that money through rate hikes and the tax breaks together.
And we don't have it. Okay, now, Sally, you recently visited with Cindy Sage. You went to meet with Henry Waxman.
Yes, well, not with Henry Waxman, but with his staff.
Oh, okay. He wasn't there, huh?
No, he was not there, but I left him a letter.
And I see that, and I have the letter, and you have issues to explore. One of the other things you've got here, which is really extraordinary, is a quote from the Director and Chief Technology Officer of Seattle's Department of Information Technology, who points out that one of the reasons for fiber optics is that he would not have had to get in his car and show up for this meeting, car, and the amount of fossil fuels used if we had fiber optic, because they could have just used a high-speed symmetric broadband network and done two-way high-def video for the meeting. So he's saying that it should definitely be done, fiber
mm-hmm.
optics. But there's other stuff here, and you do talk about, there's a section where you talk about the cost, you know, cost of fiber optic versus traditional wireline networks and stuff. But maybe you should give us the high points on the issues you want explored here.
Well, I mean, as I've been working with a lot of communities, you know, there's some through lines, and we've shared a lot of information, and we see that, the same concerns keep coming up, and we've discovered that many of the placements of the cell towers or the wireless facilities are not even necessary to serve existing demand and it's because they're trying to drive the market that basically the cell phone market is essentially saturated, and now we're looking at them using this law to not fill existing demand but try to create new demand so that they can keep selling us more and more and market more to kids, which I don't think is something that's very wise. I think it's a question on whether or not the Congress, when they passed those laws, could have anticipated that it would get to this point where now communities are being literally forced to accept these towers near homes and schools with no in most cases, they have no recourse, and they're being told, you know, you have to take this new service, and whether you like it or not. And these are services that we don't have to have through wireless. It's completely unnecessary.
Why don't we talk about the true public safety benefits? Because I think you mentioned here, and I think this is well known, that wireless 911 doesn't actually work.
Well, I mean, it's not nearly as effective. I mean, when you call on a landline, the second you make that phone call, your exact location comes up on a screen, and it's instantaneous, and it's locked on. When you call from a cell phone, you better know where you are, because the best they can do is to triangulate between three towers, and you know, when you're in an emergency situation, if you're just one house off, you know, with these people trying to find you, that's wasted trying to get to. So
I just have to acknowledge that we're having a little trouble with our line, ironically, so please just go ahead.
The 911 cell 911 is not nearly as reliable, and the fact that T-Mobile in particular is trying to market to people to get rid of the is very irresponsible, because a lot of young people at risk if they have an emergency and there's no landline available, and people should be encouraged to keep at least one corded phone and a landline. And yet these cell phone companies use that as an argument all the time to justify the approval of permits. And they'll go in and imply that if a local jurisdiction doesn't grant them a permit, that somehow somebody will be trying to call on that particular cell phone carrier and not be able to get through, when in fact any cell phone, even if it's disconnected, an old phone that doesn't have a service carrier, as long as it has a charged up battery, if you dial 911, it will connect to any signal of any carrier as a priority call. And most com industry doesn't bring that up in hearings. So
I think what I heard you say is that if we were using fiber optic, then the issue of the phones being viable at any time would go away. I mean, they would be viable all the time.
Well, I think already there's already enough capacity to handle 911 calls on, you know, in general for cell phones. But the bottom line is that the landline is more reliable, especially in the case of a big emergency where you would see a cell phone. Commercial cell phone carriers quickly becoming overloaded. I don't care how many cell towers they have. If there was a huge emergency where you don't have that happen with the landlines in the same you know,
I get it.
You know, I'm not a technical person.
No, it's fine.
I understand the gist of it, which
yeah.
is landlines are far superior.
Right, I understand. Although we are having trouble with one right now.
Yeah.
And I should say to the people at KPFA on the board, if this becomes too bad, just talk through and let me know, and I'll turn on my phone, and you can call me on the regular phone, and I'll just talk.
Elena, what we'll do is we'll reconnect.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
What we'll do is we'll reconnect if you lose your guest. Just let us know.
Okay. Doug, if you could comment on what we're talking about here in terms let me just say this is Your Own Health and Fitness. We're talking about fiber optic broadband as an alternative to wireless. I have Doug Loringer and Sally Hampton, and the website would be clout.org for more information. Doug, I think it's pretty clear what we need to do. I guess the question now is what we want people to do and how you want people to get involved with clout. What would you like to have happen now? And I also want to go over, if we have some time, what's happening in other parts of the country. But before that, let's get in why you formed clout. What you want to happen, what's on the website, the petition, and various things like that, so people can get involved now that they know what's happening.
Yeah, well, I'll start with the how to get involved first, and we can talk a little bit about the origins of how we put this group together. Basically, there was a big deadline yesterday, actually, to submit comments to the FCC on the national broadband policy. So that deadline for public comments has already passed. So we're one day late going on the air. Encourage people to comment on that, but a lot of individuals and local governments like Los Angeles did submit comments along the lines of what we've been discussing today. So basically what we're looking at then is, and the reason CLOUT was formed was to focus specifically on federal legislation. That's our elected representatives in Congress and the Senate. Now, obviously, in order to have any kind of chance, when and if legislation is introduced in Congress against the telecom lobby, which is, extremely well-heeled, influential, and powerful, it's going to take literally thousands of people around the country to be mobilized to put pressure on their elected officials in Congress. So here are three steps people can take right now if they're interested to get going in that direction. And the first is to go to our website, as you mentioned, cloutnow.org. We have a petition there in favor of repealing the Federal Telecom Act's health preemption and returning more local authority to local governments to regulate wireless facilities. And also email anyone else you know who you think would be interested and ask them to sign the petition as well. So you get into the loop on what's happening and can be, on a relatively rare occasion, we will send an email out to people when there's very specific action to take place. We're not going to bombard you with every day with messages. Now, the second thing you can do is if you're a member of a local community organization or a neighborhood group, ask that group to consider publicly endorsing the CLOUT petition. If you go to our website, you'll see there's a list, and it's a growing list of individuals, organizations, and elected officials who are publicly endorsing our efforts. And you can, once you get the approval from your neighborhood group through whatever process you go through, you can do that at the website itself. There's a separate way to formally endorse the petition. Or if you're an elected official of a local elected official out there listening to this and you are in favor of this, you can also endorse the petition as well. And finally, you can ask your local elected representatives, and that's people like city council members and supervisors, to pass after the one passed by the find it there and read it. If you're in California, then you can almost verbatim use what they did, because part of it deals with the California Public Utilities Code regulations regarding antennas on light and utility poles in public rights of way. If you're outside of California, you probably have to do a little bit of homework to see if there are similar limitations on antennas and rights of way in your state, and if there are, then you can try to get those changed as well at the state level. So those are the three things that people can do right now to get into the, you know, join the growing movement here around the country to address the issues that we've been talking about.
Okay, and can you give us kind of a snapshot of what's going on across the country? I mean, we've just had an exciting movement start. Well, we've got New York, which has had the most lax regulation of all. People have been up at arms about that. Do you want to, Doug? Do you
want I didn't catch all of that.
I know it was breaking up. What I was asking was about New York. We have really lax regulation there.
Yeah, I mean, New York has probably the dubious distinction of being the area in the country where the wireless industry has been given to run amok. Basically, under pressure from the industry back in 1998, a decision was made to allow the circumvent the community boards and the board of standards and simply obtain public notification or hearings at all. Now, just by contrast, in San Francisco, where I've been active on this issue for the past 9 years, it took 5 years after the Telecom Act of 96 was passed before the city denied its first permit for an antenna. But at least during that period, there was public notification and public hearings took place on many of these individual antenna proposals, whereas in New York, they haven't even had that. So the people in New York City who have been fighting this have had to be particularly tough and vocal to get antennas removed from buildings. And I met with a couple of these activists last year when I was visiting New York City, and it became clear to me that there was an enormous amount of energy and eagerness coming out of New York to not only change the local policies, but also to take on the federal law as well. Now, meanwhile, last year in Portland, residents were successful in there was a planned rollout of a WiMAX, new WiMAX network, and which was, as usual, targeting schools as sites for antennas. And the residents I worked with up there were successful in not only keeping a WiMAX facility off a specific school, but they convinced the Portland Unified School District as a whole to cease signing lease agreements with wireless carriers. And again, coming out of this, there was an eagerness in Portland to take on the federal law. And so it's kind of a confluence of factors. And, you know, last but not least, what was happening with Sally's case in L.A. and how she's been able to mobilize not only residents across Los Angeles, but in other neighboring, you know, city of Glendale, Pasadena, Orange County, San Diego, and so forth. That's what has kind of led to this nationwide forming of this new group. And I have to say, just recently as well, the Portland City Council did pass a resolution encouraging the Federal Communications Commission (FCC) to revise its exposure standards as well. It didn't go as far as L.A. and call for the repeal of the Telecom Act's health preemption, but they did do another thing that we want to happen, which is encourage the FCC to revise its exposure standards and make them more protective.
And what about the Sprint decision that and that almost went to the Supreme Court here, or did?
Well, yeah. Meanwhile, this, you know, there's court cases all the time on these issues. In California, there was a big case a number of years ago where Sprint sued the entire county of San Diego over their wireless ordinance, which basically says where antennas can or cannot be placed. And they initially won at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals with a three-judge panel. Then that was appealed to a full 11-judge panel, which unanimously ruled in favor of San Diego, saying their ordinance was fine. And then Sprint has now appealed that to the U.S. Supreme Court, which, and normally the Supreme Court either agrees to hear a case and then makes a decision, or it declines to hear the case at all and the decision stands. And in this case, it did neither of those things. It at this point, it asked the U.S. Solicitor General to file a brief for its opinions on the issues raised in this lawsuit. So until we see what the Solicitor General has to say, it's very hard to predict how the Supreme Court will come down on this. And I should mention, too, when I was talking about New York City and the folks who have been extremely active there, back in May, a New York City Council Member Peter Vallone Jr. introduced legislation that would restore the public notification and hearing process in the city. But in addition to that, he sent in February a letter to Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi and Senator Harry Reid, calling upon Congress to repeal the Telecom Act's federal preemption. And just last week, City Council Member Vallone publicly endorsed the cloud petition. So when you go to that website, you'll see his name up there as well.
Wow. And across the EU, across Europe, do you have any special cases there that you want to bring up? I have some printed out.
People should know that in France, for example, recently courts have been ordering antennas to be removed based on precautionary health concerns. I mentioned the European Parliament vote of April 2nd. There's a lot of ferment in Europe on this issue right now. I don't have time to go into all the details, but in France in particular, it kind of for a number of years, England and the UK and Ireland were the big tons of activity fighting what they call masts over there, which we call them cell towers here. But kind of the focus in the past year has kind of shifted a little bit to France, even though they're still active in England and elsewhere. And you had these fairly extraordinary court decisions where they ordered antennas removed for precautionary health reasons in a few cases over there. So there's a whole lot of ferment going on around the world. It's not just Europe. It's countries in Africa. It's India. It's the Middle East. It's a wireless is a global technology, a global business. And the resistance to this stuff is global as well.
I had no idea that India was resisting. I mean, they've just sort of jumped in, with all this technology.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're being debated in newspapers in India, and steps are being taken, and wherever these things are going up, pretty much you've got people doing what people like Sally and myself have been doing.
I note that the mayor of Broward County in Florida proclaimed May as EHS, it's Electrosensitivity Awareness Month. So he's proclaiming that it's real, that electromagnetic sensitivity is not insanity, and that people should be paying attention to it. Five members of the French Senate present a bill restricting EMF exposure. Actually, I can't tell when that happened because the date is written in an odd way. And then there's the European Parliament, which is a big deal, the whole EU Parliament thing.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned before. They passed a resolution 2 months ago including they also want the Europeans examined and made more protective as well. Even though in some of those states over there or locations in Europe already have some fairly very very protective standards. Salzburg, Austria, I believe, is one example.
Okay, well, let's get each of you, maybe starting with Sally, to again tell people, go ahead and talk to our listeners, tell them what you would like them to do and what you would like them to be aware of and what you'd like them to think about, Sally, and give out your website again.
I'm a member of CLOUT,
right.
REACT is part of CLOUT. What I hope to see is that people will, if they have an installation going near their home or a school and they're fighting it, that they understand that this is not something where you can just fight your own installation and then go close your door. They're not going to go away. People need to understand that this is a much bigger issue, and they have to, once they're involved, stay involved on some level and do something for the bigger cause. Otherwise, they're going to end up having to fight these things over and over and over again if we don't address the root cause, which is the federal law and the general attitude towards it. And I think a lot of it is because people are just not informed. And what I find is when I've gone out and talked to people, the knee-jerk reaction is, oh, you're going to take my cell phone away, and they don't want to hear it. But when they get all of the facts presented to them and they fully understand the trade-offs, most people will say, don't want to continue down the wireless path, and there's alternatives. We would prefer to explore those, and when fiber optic is presented to them, they all say that sounds much, much better. And I would encourage them to do what Doug has outlined, because if all of us were to start collectively putting pressure on our members of Congress, it would force them to address this, and we would have all of our cases would be so much easier to handle, and we would end up with a much smarter deployment of better technology that would benefit all of us.
And Doug, are we going to be able to get to Obama before the stimulus thing gets pushed through?
Well, the stimulus bill has already been passed. I think what closed yesterday were comments, public comments, and comments from the industry, et cetera, to the FCC. So when they're mulling over how to deal with this money and how best to formulate a policy with regard to national broadband, hopefully the issues that Sally and I discussed today, among other things, will be raised, because they have been comments made. But I think in the meantime, let's assume that there's going to be significant wireless infrastructure, new wireless infrastructure, as a result of the stimulus package. Let's at least have this federal preemption overturned, so when and if this stuff goes in, we're able to put it in using health concerns and considerations, environmental considerations, in a rational way, so we're keeping this stuff, minimizing the exposures to people and keeping it away from certain locations, schools, for example, where fiber optic connections would be far superior for students in their use of computers and so forth. So I think that's at this point, the comment period on the FCC national broadband policy is closed publicly, but the efforts to persuade our Congress to act on this issue and remove the federal preemption and get the FCC to revise its exposure standards, that's what Cloud is worked on right now, and that's where people can help.
So it's cloutnow.org, and again, if people want to, there's a lot of information and suggestion and updates, and also if people want to start little neighborhood groups, certainly they should be sending the petition and the website around to their friends on their email lists. So I want to thank you both very much, activists Doug Loringer and Sally Hampton. Doug Loringer in San Francisco, Sally Hampton in Southern California. Again, cloutnow.org. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing and for keeping us informed today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Helping us get the word out.
You betcha. Okay. And I want to thank you all for listening and remind you that all of the websites that you heard today will be on our website. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett, PhD. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.